Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories, and this season, we're exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We're back in Westeros to cover The House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And she is out here at the Hour of the Wolf. Or the Owl.
That is a horrible accusation.
Oh, and I'm Paul. Our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we have loved every minute of it. We're excited to dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and talk about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we're discussing the fourth episode of House of the Dragon, King of the Narrow Sea, which aired on HBO this past Sunday. So if you haven't seen it, go see it and come back afterwards. We'll be discussing all the content of the show, probably some content of Game of Thrones, and some differences between Fire and Blood, the book, and the show. But we will not be spoiling future events.
And if you've been with us, we're going to bring in some of our other fandoms into this one because it's appropriate. And I just want to say that we're going to have adult content. Okay, it's going to happen. And if you're here for a sexual awakening in a pleasure house that could have used the safe word ragamuffin, you've come to the right place. All right? Where's your girl Yen when you need her? Little ragamuffin could have helped out a couple of people in this situation.
Oh, gosh. I miss Yen. When's The Witcher coming back?
I don't know.
Let's not start that.
I don't know what is happening.
All right, so let's talk about some of the important plot points of Downton. I mean, House of the Dragon. It's a very Downton Abbey heavy episode.
Oh my god, Downton Dragon drama. That's what's happening.
So the episode begins with Rhaenyra on tour in the kingdom at Storm's End, where the lords of the realm are vying for her hand. Disgusted by the entire ordeal, she sails back to King's Landing and sees Caraxes flying overhead towards the city. When she arrives, Daemon is there at court, and he has a brief reconciliation with his brother.
Guess who's back? Back again. Daemon's back. Da, da, da. Tell a friend.
A friend.
Daemon's back. Guess who's back? Daemon's back. Guess who's back? Daemon's back. Guess who's back? They created a monster. Oh, man. They should have sent that help to the Stepstones earlier.
Okay. Where was I? Oh, yes. Rhaenyra also attempts a reconciliation of her own with her stepmother slash former friend, Alicent.
There's a lot of slashes going on in this family tree, all right? It's just too much happening. Do you really think that was a reconciliation? Do you?
I do. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
A little bit later. Right. But yes, I on second watch, I really did feel that they were both trying to be genuine in this conversation. That evening, at Daemon's invitation, Rhaenyra sneaks out of the Red Keep and into the city, where they watch a mummer's farce and then head to a pleasure house because that is totally normal stuff you would do with your uncle. Just a night out with your uncle on the town, hit up a little play, then you're going to go to a brothel. Totally normal behavior.
And a little theft. A little light theft aided
in
theft.
Yeah. I forgot about the actual crime that was committed. So at the brothel, things heat up between Daemon and Rhaenyra, but he leaves abruptly before things go too far. Rhaenyra heads back to the castle, where she invites Sir Crispy, aka Kristen Cole, for those of you who haven't been listening to the previous episodes, into her chambers, and she seduces him.
I mean, she got all juiced up going to a brothel. It was like, oh, wow. Okay, the next morning, Otto Hightower is tasked with telling the king that Rhaenyra and Daemon seem to be... Are you going to make me say this, sire? Well, say it now and say it plainly. They were coupling. It's a lie. Anyway.
In the hour of the wolf.
In the hour of the... In the hour.
Oh, sorry. The hour of the owl. Sorry. Not the hour of the wolf.
They were found in the bowels of a brothel. In the hour of the owl. The fucking bowels of a brothel. Oh, this guy. Anyway, so he's tasked with this of letting him know that in the hour of the owl, they were in a brothel. And Allison, basically after that, confronts Rhaenyra, and Rhaenyra denies the claim. Viserys confronts Daemon, who does not deny the claim, but instead asks for Rhaenyra's hand in marriage with a knife to his fucking throat. Well, talk about ballsy. Like, he's literally got a knife to your throat, and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to ask anyway. So he's banished from court. He never wants to lay eyes on him again. When Rhaenyra's father finally speaks to her, they strike a compromise. She'll marry Laenor Velaryon, because that's what's best for the realm, but he'll remove Otto Hightower from his position as Hand of the King. Viserys confronts Otto about promoting his relationship with Alicent after the death of Queen Emma, that he knew that it was a move that was kind of really a distraction placed by Otto, and he knew that he was trying to influence him. And because of that, he no longer can trust him and trust that he has the best interests of the realm. As he's speaking to him, he removes the pin from Otto and thanks him for his service.
Rough. But bye, Otto. I'm not sad for him.
You know,
I've been waiting for this day for a minute.
You know, I can't stand the guy. I got to tell you, I felt his pain in that moment of like, do I want to say this? I don't know if I want to say this. I really don't want to go in here. He even led off with like, it's really hard to tell a father something about their child. What do I say here? I mean, do you want me to really spit this out? He was preambling. I think this was a very difficult task, even though it was definitely something that fell in his lap and he was happy about, you know?
Let's talk to get some advice from an expert here. Okay. Since this basically happened on Downton Abbey with Mr. Kamal Panmook, rest in peace, Kamal. Sorry,
R.I.P.
Downton
Kamal.
Abbey spoilers.
Yeah.
But that was from like, I don't know, that season
Come
came
on,
out
Mr.
in like 2000.
Kamal died like mad long ago. We're not doing that.
When Mr. Carson gets word that this has happened, does he go to the Earl of Grantham?
No.
No. What does he do? He takes it to someone that he thinks will, you know, handle business about the rumor, but isn't going to tell his lordship because he knows he's going to lose his stuff. If Otto really wanted to, like, save Rhaenyra's reputation, he would have spoken to her directly, and then they would have come up with a plan.
There's no right? question about
but he
that.
Wanted to use this to his advantage, which is why I don't care that he was uncomfortable. Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that.
Unbecoming of a princess. That was her behavior. Whatever.
Yeah, these Hightowers are super judgmental. I mean, like we'll get to Alicent in a little bit. But no, I definitely think that what you're saying is I agree. I totally agree. I think if he had the realm in his mind and he had the best interests of the house in his mind and the crown and the throne, he would have found a way to clean up the mess without it ever getting to that point so that it could be taken care of. But he was really coming at it from a place of ambition, obviously, because he wants Aegon on the throne. No question.
Right. And he actually makes it worse, right? Yeah. Because then he also goes and interviews servants, which maybe they knew the princess snuck out. Maybe it doesn't seem like her sneaking out is the big deal here. It seems like the issue is what she did when she snuck out.
Yeah, my guy leads off with, like, Rhaenyra was talking to a Targaryen. He goes, Rhaenyra was in a pleasure house. And he goes, okay, what of it? He was like, okay, yeah, and? Like, okay, tell me something.
Yeah, and there were other lords and ladies and, well, I don't know about ladies, but there were definitely other, like, highborn people in the same place watching.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not that she went to the pleasure house. I mean, even she kind of uses that as, like, yeah, we, like, went and saw a show.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, we went and saw it. I went and watched.
Strip show.
I was an observer. What, Allison, you've never watched porn? Come on, get off it. Stop it. It's crazy.
So before we get to the conversation between her and Allison and all of and basically unpacking
yeah.
this incredibly uncomfortable episode.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this marriage tour, because I think we got some information here. too.
Well, it doesn't start off really good, right? It starts off with Rhaenyra insulting Lord Dondarrion about how old he is. And my boy is old. I mean, let's not get it twisted, but she could have been more respectful because Lord Dondarrion is out here like Marco Rubio circa 2013 getting a little water break in between his speech. Like, the guy's parched, okay? He jumped off, got the water break, came back, started continuing on about what Queen Alysanne said. And she's like, yes, and about that, how did you think my great-grandmother was beautiful? And he was like, well, it's been so long. Yes, it has. It has, but you knew her. You're too old, man. Then we get to House Blackwood. House Blackwood, well, let's just call it what it is. They're not taking any shit. No shit.
No. Absolutely none. This motherfucker from House Bracken starts talking shit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a little boy. So he's like, yeah, 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 whatever. Talking mad shit.
Yeah.
What happens? He gets a knife in the belly because that's how House Bracken rolls.
And yo, I just want you to peep out. If you look close in the background, there's a black lady and sis is instigating this whole thing. She's like, ooh, tell me you're a hype woman without saying you're a hype woman. She had me rolling. But these families have a long history of beef. There's beef in these streets.
It is such an incredibly long history that no one really remembers what the beef is about. And I just want to say it reminded me of the Great Divide in Atla. This reminded me of an episode that I'm not a fan of in Avatar The Last Airbender, but it is what it is, where there are two tribes beefing over some ancient stuff. And then at the end of the episode, Avatar Aang gaslights everybody and is like, no, you have the information wrong.
So what you're saying is that Aegon the Conqueror came up with like a fictitious tale and got like the Brackens and the Blackwoods to piece it out. And then he was like, and then I'm putting the Tullys in charge because you motherfuckers don't know what to do with yourselves, okay? The Tullys are in charge because it's really wild that the Tullys are in charge because the Blackwoods have a way larger army than the Tullys. They can field an army like almost like some people think even 10 times the size. They have so much more land and the Riverlands. They're such a bigger house. It's wild that the Tullys are the ones who are like the, you know, the heads of the Riverlands. So anyway, but it's
well, they knelt first.
They did.
So
they did.
You get a little reward for kneeling first.
Yeah, you definitely do. And in the midst of this, you know, listen, some of the people that grew up in New York City playing sports and playing basketball outdoors will understand this. There's always that little kid that's sitting on the side that just wants to play, and everybody thinks he's not that good. And then he gets in, and then he starts dribbling and crossing people over and breaking ankles and scoring. And you're like, holy shit, this kid is a ringer. That's what basically the kid from House Blackwood was. He was nice with this sword. He was nice with it.
He said he would protect her, yeah. Right? He was just doing a little demonstration. You're not going to disrespect House Blackwood. You're not going to do your
work. I'm a craven. Okay, cool. Take this with the gut it out. You're gutted. We're going to get you gutted out here. That's it. Ran him through.
I like how Rhaenyra was like vaguely interested after that happened. She's like, maybe I should hear him out.
No, yo, she was vaguely interested when the dude was like, he was like, oh yeah, you know, you guys, she has a fucking dragon. What does she need you for? And she's like, I can learn to like that one. Rhaenyra is so fucking crazy. Oh my God.
But all jokes aside, this is, I'm losing track of how many times Rhaenyra is insulting the lords of this land, right?
Yeah.
So we have her dismissing the Lannisters and the Red Wines. Mm-hmm. And so now she's insulting the Dondarrions and also the Blackwoods in front of the Baratheons at their castle. I mean, Bormund Baratheon tells her, this is not a good showing.
I mean,
like, what are you doing? And this is on top of her picking an unknown for the Kingsguard after all of these knights came from well-situated houses and her father insulted House Velaryon. So I just, man, she does not know how to play the game. You need allies. Just because people knelt to you doesn't mean that they're going to remember that when you become queen. And she's just running around the realm, pissing people off. And also, like, this is a little bit of a book detail, but it's a big deal to cancel a tour.
Yeah, it's a big deal to cancel a tour. It doesn't normally happen. And it was kind of abrupt, even how she left. We're getting out of here just because there was like a skirmish. There were tons of other lords waiting online to make their case. And on top of it, the person who's hosting her is Boromir Baratheon, who already was hesitant to swear his fealty to her in episode one. And for a little historical context, he also thought all this time that Lenor Valerian and his relative, Lenor's mom, Rhaenys, has the better claim. And House Valerion and House Baratheon have held that to this day. So this was a good chance for her to make, to kind of like extend an olive branch, put on a good face, win him over, soften the way he feels. It's why he's kind of sitting there disinterested, because he's almost having to do this more than he probably wants to do this.
Yeah, so he's the host of this pageant at Storm's End, right?
Yeah.
Which means that all of these lords traveled for ages to get to him. He's paying for probably everything, mm-hmm. is the host. Like, to cancel a tour early is sort of a big deal. Like, when this happened, when King Jaehaerys had to cancel a tour early in his reign because he had another issue to deal with. He had to deal with some diplomacy with the Free Cities. Alysanne went in his stead and tried to like keep the lords happy, because it's a big deal to tell people you're just not coming.
Yeah.
So I was kind of disappointed with her in this episode.
Yeah, and that example, I think, which is really good, is Alysanne not only went, but she actually won over. She stayed for a long time in the north. That's why she's one of the few Targaryens that actually flew her dragon to the wall. And she felt what it was like to be over there. And the North was not really feeling the rest of the Seven Kingdoms. They're a disgruntled bunch. We know this already. And they weren't loving. They were like kind of like, okay, whatever, we got it. You know, it's going to cost us so much to like have like the royal court here and have like, you know, the king come. And they were not into it. And she went over there and she won them over with just who she was, how humble she was, how engaging she was. This is a real opportunity that Rhaenyra can't get out of her own way to win over the realm, to have people start talking about her, to want to follow her, that whoever she picks will feel honored to be picked, but also they want to keep their oaths because she is who she is if she shows her that way. So now she's like basically made everybody kind of say, we don't really care for her like that. She's not really that great of a person.
Yeah. I mean, she seems to have that Targaryen arrogance, which isn't serving them very well lately.
No. And on the boat, we get back and Daemon is flying in. He's flying a little low. I mean, coming in hot with Caraxes. Like, it's pretty fast what's going on. So and then he gets there and he's wearing a crown, comes into the throne room. What was your take on that?
Daemon Targaryen is always doing the most. Just always doing the most. I'm just like, you did not need to play bumper cars with the ship.
It was a lot. Caraxes has no spatial awareness. Like, what happened? He was like, yeah, let me get this boat. Was it just coming in that fast?
No, he knew what he was doing. Sorry.
Little
it was unnecessary. It was very extra. And showing up with the crown, also extra, but at least, like, I think he did want the symbolism of taking the crown off and offering it to his brother. So I think that was a little bit of a, like, peace offering. It was a physical thing that he could offer his brother to show that he's ready to kneel and be, you know, his subject.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I thought that was, you know, the physical representation. He drops the sword, the weapon of the crab feeder. He drops and added to melt it down with the rest of the swords. He gives him the crown, kneels, says, you know, he knows who the real king is. And, you know, Viserys raises him up pretty quickly. Everyone was anticipating, like, hey, something's going to happen here, because they all know he was kicked out. They all know he went off and fought a war without his brother's blessing. Everyone's aware of what's going on in the realm, so that's why the court filled up. Everybody, like, hey, let's all get inside the throne room. We want to see what's going on, you know? And I don't know. I kind of feel like a big portion of this episode is about, obviously there's always like a little bit of manipulation, but I think, like, you know, the guise of friendship, you know, with manipulation underneath it. I never really feel like everybody's moving. Self-interest is really what we talked about a lot, you and I. We were like, hey, when Viserys is talking about self-interest later, which we'll get to, it's really about people who are self-interested. And a lot of times when you're self-interested, you can't show people that you're self-interested to get your way. You have to use some form of manipulation. And I think this is like the grandest form of manipulation. I mean, he flies in on his dragon, lands with the crown, does all these things. And this kind of like bowing and showing himself to be improved and different, it takes Viserys back. And he's like, oh, wow, this person is like maybe learned some things. Let me let him into my confidence again. And that's what he uses.
Yep. And, you know, in the, I guess that's their tiny godswood by the Weretree. Mm-hmm. When they're all kind of gathered to celebrate his return, you know, you have this sort of like warm relationship between Viserys and Daemon, which I thought was very sweet and felt genuine. Like Viserys was genuinely happy to have his brother back in the fold. And, you know, you also get the reconciliation between Allison and Rhaenyra, which I thought was genuine. I know that everyone didn't read it that way, but I thought it was also sweet. Like, here they are, two friends who are kind of in situations that they both don't like. Rhaenyra is getting this chilly reception from her dad because he's super pissed that she's back. Like, when he saw her in the throne room, he looked like he was gonna lose it, but he was like, no more public fights, no more public fights. No more public fights. And so I think we should talk a little bit about like all those three conversations that happened at the celebration.
There were quite a few.
What did you think about the one with Rhaenyra and Allison?
Yeah, so the one with Rhaenyra and Allison, I think it's similar. I think it's a similar game afoot with the two of them as they're learning how to navigate this world and their stations and their relationship and the ways that it's changed. I think there's a similar game afoot of Daemon and Viserys. And what I mean by that is that there's a genuine love and care and feeling for the two for each other. They really do care for each other. So you'll always have interactions where you're like, well, man, that probably felt like they really were having a connection. But underneath it, there's still a distrust that doesn't allow for true connection. The only way, and so in the beginning of the conversation, you saw Allison kind of had the wall up, and then she saw Rhaenyra by herself. And so that kind of softened her. Well, a person who knows the friend knows that that will get Allison's attention. So she goes off and does it on her own. And then Allison comes over and sits over, and she wants to talk to her because she really does need to talk because she's pretty lonely. But then they kind of go and back and forth, and it's like, seems like it's really genuine. But I thought there was a pause right after she said what she said about, well, you know, being stuck and trapped in a castle, popping out heirs. And then it wounded Allison. And then she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And that felt like semi-genuine. And then she kind of held her hand, and then she sat there, and then she asked her right after that, is he mad at me? So now she's being vulnerable because she's going to let down the wall to make it seem like, Allison, I really am sorry. Like, I just want to be vulnerable. And in that level of manipulation is deep. And Rhaenyra is proving that she has the capability of that. So that now Allison's going to be like, well, no, this is what he said. He's really just disappointed. He's not really mad at you. Now she's getting the information that she needs. But I don't think anything was, I truly didn't think it was a genuine interaction.
That's interesting. I did. And the reason I did was because I haven't really seen much to show that Rhaenyra is capable of kind of maneuvering people the way that Allison can. But I also just thought the acting, and more than anything, I thought the acting kind of just said that it was genuine, that these two were maybe not fully reconciled, but certainly, you know, on the road to healing.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, my point is that I just don't think it was a genuine response, even just based on, I don't want to get into the next conversation, but the conversation after just hinting at it, she basically expresses that she wants to be in solitude. She wants to be by herself. So this sentiment of, oh, I miss you, I want to be with you, seems very disconnected from like, yeah, I just don't want to be around people. I want to be all alone.
Yeah, I hear that. I just think that Allison knows the difference between Rhaenyra pretending she wants to be alone and wanting to be alone. Yeah. I don't know. I think that you can interpret the scene either way. I don't think that either one of us is particularly right. I felt that they were trying to reconcile. I actually had like an aw moment, but I also could see what you're saying, that maybe this is Rhaenyra just choosing the easiest path, which is to make peace with her stepmother.
The other conversation that really stood out to me was just, it seems like a throwaway conversation about Viserys being kind of like a little bit down about, hey, yeah, you were always mom's favorite, but you know, Daemon, I wanted to kind of talk about this just a little bit. Daemon really is more cut from the cloth, as is Rhaenyra, of Baelon, their dad, and Alyssa Targaryen, who was his sister, their mom, in a sense that this person was, they were very adventurous, they were gregarious, she was like a warrior, she dressed in, the mom especially was a lot like Rhaenyra. Alyssa Targaryen was like, she followed after Baelon and she dressed in like warrior's clothing and she always wanted to, she'd rather be a knight like or use swords than be a lady in this time. And she was very much into it. In fact, they talk about how loud and intense their betting session was because the two of them were so into it. And we'll talk about the whole scene later on. But also like that she was, that it wasn't like, oh, this is just one-sided. She was also like very braggadocious about this, right? She was like, I mounted him and took him for a ride, she declared morning after the betting. And she's like really, really that person. And I think a lot of this is translating down through Daemon and ipse facto her granddaughter. And I think Viserys is kind of noticing this, which is why he's seeing like the way that both of them are, and he can identify pretty quickly, oh, this is a lot like how my mom and some parts of my dad. Now, Baelon was able to kind of hone some of that into being a good hand of the king, but in the beginning, he was also kind of wild and wanted to show up his brother, his older brother, because Aemon was so accomplished. And he, you know, was known to be a great warrior, but he also was kind of like, hey, there was a rivalry between the two of them, even though they had a deep love. And so this relationship between Viserys and Daemon has a lot of shades of their parents' relationship and who they were to them, and also how their granddaughter, Baelon and Alyssa's granddaughter, is turning out. And I just wanted to highlight that for anyone who didn't have that history or context.
Yeah, I think that there's that like Targaryen arrogance that is clearly at play here. And we're used to it, right? Daenerys Targaryen was very arrogant a lot of the time. And I think that you definitely see that with Rhaenyra, and 100% see it with Daemon. So yeah, I thought that conversation was really interesting, and just like, I kind of just like seeing the brothers together after so much discord, and like the way that they parted. Of course, they don't make it to the end of this episode without beefing again, but it was nice to see them, you know, kind of reminiscing and talking together.
Yeah, you want to see them stay close, you know, you want to see them find a way to work it out. And I honestly was thinking about this earlier today. I think part of Daemon's disappointment with his brother is that, you know, when Jaehaerys was looking for a hand of the king after one of his hands had served for 40 years, he made his son the hand of the king. And I think part of him is like, you know, many other there's other Targaryens who have been hands. There's other Targaryens who have been by the side of the king. And if I couldn't be the king, I should be the closest thing to. And we've talked about this earlier. And I really think at this point, he's bitter about that. And I think that's why Viserys is like catering to him. Oh, you know, you were always mom's favorite and this and that and that. Because he has to know his brother enough to know that Daemon is still not cool with the fact that he's kind of distanced him from being in proximity to the power.
Yeah. I mean, I do think one thing that was cool to see in this episode is that Rhaenyra is on the council now. She's no longer the cupbearer.
Yeah.
She has a seat. She has one of those little marble things. Like, she is.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's like fully respected, right? They still may look at her strange when she speaks, but she's no longer serving them. She's part of the council, which I think is pretty dope.
Yeah, no, I definitely liked seeing that 100%.
So let's talk a little bit about like this conversation that Daemon and Rhaenyra have, and then we'll talk about their totally normal
night out. Oh, so yeah, what did you think of the conversation between the two of them?
I thought it was a good conversation. It kind of, I've been wondering how much of Rhaenyra's, like, I don't know what to call it, but her kind of like resistance to getting married, just how much of that was solely based on, you know, her personality, and how much of it was informed by the fact that she doesn't want to go through what her mom went through. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a great moment where she's able to acknowledge that marriage is different for men and women, even though Daemon, you know, claims it's not. But it's different for men and women. So there's a different standard for her. And she's able to say, like, my mother went through this and look what happened to her. And someone actually says, what happened to your mother was a tragedy. It shouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't stop you from living your life and being, you know, happy. And I thought that Daemon's quote about fear was so great. And I actually think it should have. Like, it would have been nice if Alicent could have heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's too late for Alicent to hear it, but I wish somebody had said to Alicent, you can't live your life in fear or you forsake the best parts of it. Mm-hmm. Because I think she if she took that to heart, maybe would have taken a different path. And we see Alicent in what I would call a real like crisis in this episode. Even though it doesn't feel super urgent, it feels really desolate and lonely and sad. And so I thought this conversation between Daemon and Rhaenyra was a really nice one, considering that, you know, her dad doesn't really talk to her about life stuff.
Yeah.
It's all like air, you're the air. You know, like this was someone actually talking to her about how she feels and how, you know, trying to like tell her that it doesn't have to be this way. Like, you can model this your own way. Of course, he then later uses that in a way that I find, I don't even know it. We'll talk about how, yeah, I feel about it later. But like, you know, I think that it was a good conversation. I also just love whenever they speak Valyrian to each other.
Yeah, I love that. I totally love it.
It's a great ad, you know, just to have them like and I like to also think about how different it is from when Daenerys used Valyrian, mm-hmm, which was often intentionally to, you know, obscure something or to show her birthright or whatever. I really like when it's more intimate, you know, they're talking to each other in this language that, you know, other people at court know, but not many.
Yeah. And it's really clear that the two of them have that way of like they're gonna talk in Valyrian. I don't know that I've really seen Viserys and Daemon have conversations in Valyrian, right? Like, this is something that have we seen that on the show?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so it's something that's kind of intimate between the two of them. I kind of thought that in the beginning he notices right away, you know, that she's wearing the necklace that he gave her.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And I think there's a dance to talk about the Dance of Dragons, there's a dance that's happening in this conversation between the two of them. I truly think that he notices that, and he's like, oh, okay, like, you're wearing the necklace. And then she's like, kind of right away to it, like, you know, hey, so surely you didn't come back here just to taunt my father. Like, what are you here for? What do you want? She knows Damon, and she's like pressing him. And he kind of after that walks away and kind of like goes to sit, because he's like, yeah, yeah, no, I just came back because I just wanted to be, you know, the comforts of home. I wanted those comforts.
Which I found odd, right? Because why would he consider the Red Keep home?
Well, he grew up in it, right? Didn't he grow up there?
Sure, but I feel like Dragonstone would probably feel more like home.
Yeah, for all of them, he would want to go back, because and I mean, she says that, right? You're right. She does say, well, you seem pretty comfortable in Dragonstone. So, yeah, you're right.
She's like, in my seat.
In my seat. Yeah, exactly. You were holding up in my castle just fine. Like, what's the deal?
I mean, I think this episode did a great job of using dialogue to tell us what was happening in terms of people's intentions and what they were experiencing. Because there were multiple times in the episode where people said things and I was like, oh, that actually applies to this case, or that actually applies to that case. You know, like the example I just used where I said, I wish Allison had heard this thing about living a life of fear. Because, you know, young Allison, before she married the king, was a mess. Was suffering from a lot of anxiety and was really struggling. And if she had, you know, anyone to be like, don't be afraid of this. Don't be afraid of your father. Don't be afraid of, you know, disappointing people. I think maybe she would have made different choices, or maybe she would have approached the choices differently. Maybe she still marries the king, but she puts some boundaries in there. And then obviously closer to the end of this episode, Viserys says the self-interest piece. And I was like, everyone in this episode is so self-interested.
Yeah.
Like, this is, everyone has an agenda, including Allison and Viserys, even though their agenda isn't as clear, but everyone just uses everyone else in this episode for their political or personal gain.
And Damon kind of speaks to that too in that conversation when he goes, you know, marriage is a political arrangement, but you can still do whatever you want afterward. Like, he was basically like, yeah, who cares? Get married. Marry whoever you need to for political reasons, but you can still do and live how you want to live. And that's like his worldview, right? Like, using the situation, but like, don't like let the situation define you. I'm going to do whatever I want to do when I want to do it.
Yeah, I feel like that's a very privileged view. I don't actually think all marriages for Rhaenyra are created equal. You know,
I agree. I 100% agree with you.
I think she could totally marry somebody who's like, do you, my queen?
Yeah.
And then she could marry somebody who is essentially like a tyrant. So I think that part of what he was saying, yeah, like, that's how he's able to live his life, but has becomes very clear in this episode, is both he and Rhaenyra note. She was born a woman. She doesn't have the same options.
Yep, 100%. And I think she exactly pushes back on him saying that in the conversation. And I just think that I think, like, this is, again, another, to your point in the conversation where it's all about individualism. It's all about self-interest. He can't see that Rhaenyra honestly won't have the same outcome as him. You know what I mean? He's just like, yeah, whatever. Like, just do whatever you want. Which I think is flawed, 100%.
Well, after we talk about what transpired between them, I want to put a pin in that and come back to it, because is it willful ignorance or is it intentional?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a really good question.
I mean, I have a lot of questions about Damon coming out of this episode. And so let's just talk about what happened between them.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So the Mummer's farce, I think that was supposed to be a teaching moment. Like, it's not, I think you said this yesterday when we talked before we recorded, and I think you were right. This is a genuine moment of, hey, like, take a look at how the small folk actually think about you.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes my girl again being like, it's a little matter.
Yeah.
Ma'am.
So the lords are all upset with you. The small folk don't like you and think Aegon should be the king. Like, what do you think you're going to rule? Like, and he says, you know, hey, if you plan on ruling them, it may be of some consequence, you know?
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't buy this from her. I don't even think she really believes this, because just one episode ago, she's turned into Sir Crispy and saying, do you think the realm will ever accept me?
Yeah.
She knows this is an uphill battle, but she just, like, doesn't want to admit it. And she also, like, doesn't appear to want to do anything to improve it.
A little stabbing of a boar is a little cathartic experience. It may free some of those fears. And maybe you're just like, you know what? I'm over it. I'm fine.
Well, you know, the white stag did appear to her.
That's right.
So I guess she's like, I got the stag's approval.
Yeah.
What do I need the small folk for?
Oh, man. If only there were, like, a whole thousands and thousands of stags for you to, like, you know, rule.
You know, create an army or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, Syrax cannot stand against all of the small folk.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so when they get into the brothel, I think there were a few things that Daemon did that I was just like, what is even happening here? But I think the first thing is that he takes off his disguise and then he removes hers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, so bruh, you wanted everybody to see y'all.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from, like, I'm showing you a night out. I wanted you to see what it's like to take what you want,
mm-hmm.
that sex can be pleasurable. It doesn't have to be something that's done for duty and to make heirs. But also, I want to make sure everybody in this joint sees your Valyrian hair.
Yeah. And people notice.
This is not like, you know, the Baratheon family walking around, you know, black of hair. Like,
yeah.
They all have silver hair.
Yeah.
Like, they're clearly going to be recognized as at the very least as the blood of Valyria. And if not, just being with Daemon identifies her as the princess.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
I mean, I don't know. On second watch, I became so angry with Daemon for this.
I think this is intent. I think that he's decided that he wants to hurt his brother and that he didn't care about hurting Rhaenyra and trying to hurt his brother. And he only, you know, the after show says that he didn't go through with it. The after the show wrap up says he didn't go through with it because he was impotent. There's nothing on camera, in my opinion, that shows that, right? Like, I didn't see that scene and be like, oh, he couldn't, you know, get it up. Like, that's what it was. But essentially what they're saying is that her being into it was like, oh, wait, like, she's really into this and that's kind of fucks him up, and that's why he gets into his cups and drinks even heavier, because he honestly realizes what he's doing is, in that moment, fucked up. But he's, up until the very end, he's committed to this course of ruining Rhaenyra and fucking with his brother up until the very end of that whole situation. And he still brings it about by not even admitting it later on, by trying to say, oh, yeah, it happened later on, which is truly fucked up. So, like, it's proof that he's just exactly what we were talking about in the beginning of the episode. He wanted to let everybody rock everybody to sleep with, like, I'm a changed person, I'm a this and that and that, so that he could ultimately hurt the people who he thought hurt him.
Yeah. I think that on first watch, I thought this was a mixture of things. It wasn't until he refused to deny it that I was like, that was when I was like, okay, this was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was a setup. But before that, I was like, oh, I think things just kind of got out of hand. It's super uncomfortable because this is the same actress who was playing a 14-year-old in, you know, just a couple of episodes mm-hmm. ago. And a grown man. And not only just a grown man, her uncle. I mean, the cringe levels on this mm-hmm. are massive. But putting all of that aside, because we did kind of sign up for this kind of cringe.
For Westeros. Like, Westeros is mad cringy. Like, since episode one, season one of Game of Thrones. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, trying to put all of that aside and not get too bogged down in the cringe element of this. I just... this is just abhorrent to me on multiple levels. And I here are my questions for it, though, that I wanted to run by you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we also learn in this episode that Missaria is now some kind of like mistress of secrets. She's feeding information to Otto, and she does it using this little boy who sees Rhaenyra after Daemon leaves her at the brothel, and then he reports it to Otto. So my question for you is, do you think Missaria is working in tandem with Daemon, or do you think he knew that she was going to send the information? Like, what do you think her role is? Because this is what I really am fascinated by this.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it too. At first, when we talked about it, I was kind of just like, I don't know. I don't know that it's that I was really like that worried about it. And then I watched multiple more times, and that for that specific thing. And I do think that it's an interesting take that she has when she says, "I'm your protector." You know, he's like, "I don't need the protection of, you know, a common whore," and then she goes, I'm not so common," and that exchange, right? Mm-hmm. But she leads off with, thankfully I'm your protector and not someone who's after you. So the question would have to be, you know, and him saying, "Well, am I your prisoner now?" So it's very interesting. So I can't make out whether she's working with him or working with Otto in a way, because what doesn't jive is that he says later, this source has never, ever been wrong, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So if that implies that he's been getting information from her for a long time, and he mm-hmm. knows that Daemon is not his friend. So where I landed with it at the end of it is that Otto's actually using Missaria, he thinks, to get information from Daemon. And that's how he gets a lot of information about Daemon, because Daemon is his enemy. And let's face it, Daemon has his cock is his weakness. So that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm landing on that today. Mm-hmm. I could be easily persuaded that there's more to this setup than we first noted. Mm-hmm. And I guess my big question about Missaria, was she the original snitch?
You mean the heir for the day? Was she the one who?
Yeah. Was she the one who took? I think she may have been.
It's on the table. I mean, she was right there, and she's the last person we see before he gives the speech, and she gives him the cup.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on the table.
And then, as I mentioned to you, and this is probably me like exhaustedly looking at the episodes too closely, yeah. but I went back and watched the bridge scene where like we made fun of Otto relentlessly for being a little bit too overdramatic.
Who is Missaria? Daemon's whore. you got here with a whole lot of bass in your voice.
So now I'm like, all of this is sus.
Yeah.
Like, was he protesting a little bit too much about send your whore away? It was like a little bit extra.
Yeah.
So now Missaria for me goes from being a character who I was more interested in what happens in the future with her, that now I'm like, oh, I'm keeping an eye on this woman 100%. And then one other thing I want to ask you before we move on off this. Do you think Corlys was involved?
Doesn't make sense at this point. I'll hold on that. I got to get a little more information.
Yeah, right?
Doesn't add up a lot to me at this point that he would have any involvement in that portion of it. I do think he's leaning on, he's strategically sending things So people to the crown's knowledge, so that people start thinking about how they need to maneuver. Like, it's no accident, in my opinion, that a message got to Otto's brother in Old Town about the possibility of him wedding his son or his daughter to somebody in the Free Cities.
The Sea Lord of Braavos.
Wedding his daughter to the Sea Lord of Braavos. And that doesn't seem accidental because...
But like, what if Missaria was also... I don't know.
What if Missaria is also involved in that? Well, let's be honest. We know more about Missaria than we're saying in this episode. I mean, I think one thing we can say, because they refer to her as that in this, is that she has the moniker the White Worm. So it's very interesting that, you know, the Blood Worm is Daemon's dragon nickname, and her nickname is the White Worm. So we'll leave that there. And what I'll just say, you know, honestly, is I think there is something that they're doing on the show that adds a little bit more color to who she was, even from the books. And this is, I mean, as a person who read the book, I'm still sitting here like, yo, I don't know what they're going to do with Missaria. And it's very interesting because I kind of feel like she's got her hand in a lot of different pots here, and she could be similar to a Varys or a Littlefinger. Well, we know who the Littlefinger of this crew is going to be, but maybe she's similar to like a Varys, who's like kind of playing a different game here.
Yeah, I definitely wondered that. And I also just, I think it's hard not to think of the other folks in Westeros from Game of Thrones who were from the Free Cities or mm-hmm. from Essos, and how they kind of came into the picture. How did they become, how did they get into the court? How did they become influential? And so I'm thinking of Melisandre and Varys there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think she went from a character that I was totally disinterested in and thought, okay, in like maybe next season she'll be an interesting character, or in two seasons she'll be an interesting character, who I'm now like, I'm watching her like a hawk because I want to know what she's been up to all this time and how many events she may have influenced. I'm not saying definitively that she had anything to do with the information that Otto got from supposedly his brother. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not saying that I'm not accusing Corlys of anything. I just think it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, I agree. And I found the symbolism of, there's some symbolism that I thought was really interesting in the scenes with Rhaenyra and Daemon that play into what we're talking about here, is that you had like a lot of fire and people playing with fire when they were out in the street walking. And then you had mm-hmm. people up tightrope walking. And I thought, well, that's not a random choice. Like walking this tightrope of like this balancing act that we're seeing play out for Rhaenyra and Daemon in their own relationship, but also Daemon and Missaria are playing and walking that tightrope, and Otto and Viserys are walking that tightrope. There's a lot of that playing with fire energy of like, this is really something we shouldn't, Kristen Cole and Rhaenyra, we shouldn't be fucking with this, but let's go for it. You know what I mean? And I think Missaria is playing the long game. I mean, we've seen it within a few episodes. She was, you know, first episode, she is working in the pleasure house and owning the thing. Next episode, she's there wanting to be liberated. And then it's progressed. Now she's sending out spies here and there. Maybe she's been doing that from the beginning and we just didn't know. And we're finding out the onion's being peeled back.
Yeah, I'm curious. I definitely want to keep an eye on her. So let's talk about Rhaenyra and Sir Crispy, and also Alicent and
Viserys,
which I don't want to spend a lot of time on.
Yeah, I mean, Alicent and Viserys is just super. I mean, that was just we can sum it up in one thing. It's,
I mean,
painful.
It's so sad.
Yeah,
both of honestly, like, I felt so much sympathy for Alicent in this episode. Her life just, like, that's not what, when a little girl wants to be a queen or princess, that's not how she's imagining mm-hmm. it, taking care of someone else. And like, her entire day was taking care of other people.
Yeah.
Her children, her husband. I think that's probably relatable to many women, but like, it just, to be so young and this is her whole life is just really rough. And, you know, baby Helena seems like a little bit fussy.
Helena's very fussy. She was up crying. Yeah. And Rhaenyra just walked. Rhaenyra didn't even like, oh, let me see what's going on with the baby. She just like walked into her room like the baby's bawling. I don't know how she was.
I don't think she's interested in her step siblings. Her half siblings. She doesn't seem interested in them at all. Mm-hmm. It just felt like such a lonely life for Alicent. And yes, it is a life she chose, but I don't think, well, maybe
did she
chose,
really choose it though?
Yeah, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's not fair to say she chose it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure how much agency she actually had in it.
I think that Alicent is in bondage from duty. She's bound by mm-hmm. duty. And she is, so that's why that, you know, locked as a prisoner in a castle, popping out heirs, wounded her so much. Because mm-hmm. she is in a prison of really not her own making, but of a making based on her idea of rightness and wrongness and what duty looks like versus not being dutiful. And we see that play out in the later conversation with her and Rhaenyra and the Godswood about what happened on the night out. We're not there yet, but I'm just like, this is like, she's very like, it has to be this way. So much has gone into this. We have to do it. She's dutiful above everything. And, you know, sometimes being that rigid and that dutiful, you can lose out, like you said, on a lot of the it comes from a place of fear, and that fear makes you lose out on some of the joys and things in life like we've spoken about. And I think like that's what I get from Alicent in this moment, you know?
Yeah. And what I get from Viserys is he's in bad shape, you know. He's really struggling with these wounds. He's obviously not a very healthy man.
Yeah.
He seemed happier this episode than he until drama went down. Mm-hmm. But he was genuinely happy to have Daemon back. He was annoyed with Rhaenyra, but such is life when you have a teenage or a younger daughter. So, but he seemed like he was probably doing better than usual, and he was still really struggling physically. He's basically using his sword as a cane.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's using this like ancient.
Yeah. Ancient Valyrian blade as a cane. Yeah.
Sword, Valyrian steel sword as a cane. So I felt a lot of empathy for both him and Alicent, and that's kind of funny, right? Because they're the king and the queen. Like, they, of everybody in the story, they should be faring the best, and I still had a lot of sympathy for them.
Well, I also had some other issues, though. I mean, listen. She's giving the guy a bath. She's rubbing the water on his skin. Oh, you have his Viserys is like freaking flirting game really bad. He's like, oh, you have a gentler touch than the other people. Like, if that was your like, hey, stay in here because we should have sex now. I want to have sex with my wife conversation. That's weird. Okay. That was a weird. And so you let her go all the way back to her room. She got in her, like, she's like dressed for bed. She's had a nice cup of sleepy time tea, blew out her candle, she's sleeping, and then you send, hey, the king required your presence. What? Why are you
so annoyed? I was so annoyed by that. I actually thought she was gonna say no.
She should. This is the point that I don't understand. She doesn't. That's the part about Alicent I'm talking about with the duty. She doesn't understand that kind of agency to be like, I'm not going. I'm sleep. Tell the king that you found me sleep and you couldn't raise me. That's it. That's the end of the story. Like, why are you doing this?
I don't get the impression that he could have ever done that with Emma.
No.
Emma would have been like, and? Tell him another night. Like,
yeah, 100%. That's what I'm saying. And I think the tragedy in this is that you know, and he speaks to it. I think if he would have been left to just grieve on his own, he would have eventually remarried. I don't know that he remarries Alicent, but she was planted there to be the person. So it's kind of like both of them going through the motions of this thing that's been maneuvered for them. And it feels really terrible. But I also think he has a culpability here. One, don't summon your wife after she's like gone to freaking bed and down the way. Y'all were together. You didn't have, this was not, You didn't say, hey, why don't you stay in my room tonight? You didn't do any of that. So don't do that later on. What happened between her getting down the hall and getting in bed and sleeping a bit till then? The other thing is have some like fucking awareness that like she's like off somewhere else while you're in the midst of the act. Like that's a problem. That's a huge problem that he had no awareness of what was going on for her in that moment. That's terrible. I'm sorry.
Oh, he noticed that she wasn't engaging. He tried to, you know, move her face that she was.
Oh yeah, that's
him,
right.
She,
that is in that next. She was. Yep.
She was totally disinterested. I think you raise a really good point about how he summoned her that I almost forgot, which is it was awful regardless of the situation, but like especially since we know that Allison spent some part of her day with like taking care of the kids, which I've yet to see him.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Like this is probably a fairly sleep deprived woman. Like just let her have her rest. I was really annoyed by this.
Yeah. 100%. 110%.
So unless you know, terrible sex.
Oh, terrible sex. It's so bad. Like, man, that's and juxtaposed with like Crispy and Rhaenyra like having a great time. Like just a great time. They just look like they were having as much fun as they possibly could once it got going. The beginning, felt a little bit, I don't know, felt a little off.
Okay, the dynamic here is not great.
No.
Okay, this is, so I had two Outlander feels during this scene. One is the undressing, which was very intimate and playful and like, I liked that part and it reminded me of Outlander.
I know where you're going. I already know where you're going. Yes.
The other one is this felt very much like Geneva Dunsany.
Exactly.
And Jamie Frazier.
You were going to do it.
This is super uncomfortable. Like, can I'm going to, for the purpose of this conversation, I'm going to call him Sir Crispin.
Yeah.
Sir Crispin.
Yeah.
Because I want to be serious about this for a moment.
Yeah.
The power dynamics here are uncomfortable. Like, yeah. I think that Sir Crispin was into it, and I think that he also desires Rhaenyra. But I just want to acknowledge if a man had done what she did to a woman servant or to a girl servant, we would be screaming that this was not consensual. Like, she blocks him from leaving. Mm. She's kind of ordering him about. And can he really say no?
I don't think he can. I mean, we're in an episode where he explains to her how privileged she is and then says to her, you know, and before you made me a member of the Kingsguard, no Cole had ever risen to a station this high. Everything I have is because of you. So he holds her in esteem and a deep love because he feels like you raised me up from nothing to this. And so there's like a weird kind of like level of like, there's not a weird, it's a very, very rough dynamic power wise, because he can't really in that moment say no. And then, and he's probably thinking and offend the person who's made his whole life what it is. And yeah. I do think that there has always been, he did ask for her favor at the tourney. So there has always been a little bit of something there, but he knows how impossible it is for him to actually be the person who is by her side. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, I think this was kind of a sad scene for him because I do, even though I do think there's this weird power dynamic at play, I do think that Christian has feelings for Rhaenyra.
Yes, I do too.
And I think that Rhaenyra has like a little, like a crush, like a teenage crush. Like she thinks he's cute. I don't think she's caught deep feelings for him, but she's obviously attracted to him. Well, but I felt really sad because I was like, you know, by the end of this episode, she's basically betrothed to Lenor Velaryon. Like, she's going to go live on Driftmark probably, you know, like it just didn't feel like, or probably Dragonstone. Maybe Sir Christian goes with her. Maybe not. Like, this relationship is not going to progress the way that I think that he would like it to.
Yeah, well, all right. So there is a very strange triangle that's developing here. And we can say that in confidence. We know her and Kristen Cole hooked up when she got back to the palace. She had the situation in the brothel with Damon. But there's also her bumping into Harwin Strong in the alley after him giving her the eyes during the hunt, and then freaking like letting her go without saying anything and being like, yeah, I'll keep your secret. So there's this weird kind of like dynamic of people circling. And now we have Leonor Valerian who's entered the chat. I mean, this is something to keep an eye on, in my opinion.
And we still, who knows if like Jason Lannister is going to press is he going to be salty that this Leonor Valerian thing is, you know, like,
listen, he can be Salt Bae. He's not getting shit. Okay. Just get that guy out of here. Like, you go over there up to Casterly Rock and just play with in your gold mines and be happy. Scrooge McDuck it out, but you're not touching the princess. It's not happening. Go away.
Yeah, I think the wedding next week is, you know, in the preview there, it looked like they were celebrating or at least announcing. I don't know if it's going to be the actual wedding, but I think the gathering of families is going to be interesting because there's a lot of players on the board right now.
Yeah, but I just think it's
and
very
some of them are kind of hotheads and they're almost all of them know how to fight.
Yep, they're all hotheads and they're all not. Yeah, I mean, and it's just, I don't know. I think that Rhaenyra's not that into Kristen Cole to the point that she will do what she needs to do for herself, but she does find him attractive and she does like him to an extent, but I don't think it's like how he reveres her. Like she, mm-hmm. And it's because of the power dynamics. Again, he was just a kind of like a very good fighter, but not in a house of any sort of like consequence. They didn't even know what his house was at the freaking tourney. They were like, who else do we know from House Cole? So he's just tough, 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 tough sigil. Like just a bunch of lumps of coal. Like it's rough. It's like Littlefinger's sigil in Game of Thrones that he made up for himself. Like it's like the word you're going to just a mockingbird that you just can make that up. Okay, cool. Give yourself a sigil. Awesome. Anyway.
So we should talk about the Allison Rhaenyra conversation. And then I think we, you know, big thing from this show is the prophecy. We haven't talked about it yet.
Are we going to talk about it? I was not going to do it.
I think we should at least note it. Okay. Let's talk about Allison and Rhaenyra.
Okay.
Okay. So we, like, I think we both had different impressions of this conversation, but I was really struck immediately by how genuinely pissed off Allison was, which surprised me, and I think also surprised Rhaenyra.
Yeah,
like she was genuinely angry. Why do you think she's so angry? I have my own theories, but what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot of things operating here for Allison at once. I think that she is, again, about duty. And so she has pushed aside all of her desires to do all these things. The things that they talked about in the Godswood where she was like, let's just like fucking eat cake and fly dragons. Let's like do all of that stuff and like forget about all this other politicking. Allison is so, she's got the 9-to-5. She like, she said, fuck this being a rapper shit. I'm going to go get the 9-to-5 job, right? Like, she's given up on artistic pursuits, on anything else in the realm, like how people do regular, like she's the 9-to-5. That's it. That's my life. I've given up on my dreams. Nothing wrong with a 9-to-5. I got one. We all got them, right? But the point is that there's still something about having that little juice of like just adventure and spontaneity, things that you can do when you're kind of working for yourself or doing whatever, right? This is Allison's life. She's a little bit upset at Rhaenyra having the freedom to do this even. And I think that's mm-hmm. That's part of the anger. Also, she spent a lot of time. She's like, I know my friend is upset with me. I know that she thinks that like I could have done anything but have like this situation with her dad. I don't really think I could have because my dad told me I had to do this, but I'm going to spend all my time, every moment I have, trying to convince him to let her pick her own person, to not try to pressure her to do certain things, like speak to him to help him be a better father to her. And I finally got him to do some of the things that I thought that she would want. And she's probably fucked this up if this is true. And I'm pretty pissed off about it. I also think she's a very religious person.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense for her anger and frustration. I was really wondering about the religious part. Because Allison is seen with a lot, like there's just a lot of like religious stuff going on with her. Like she's staring out at the sept. We saw her take Rhaenyra to the sept in an earlier episode. She seems to be really into the faith of the seven. And so I just wondered if that religious element is part of it.
Well, it does. It has something because she uses like, she had like a little old town kind of like condescension, you know, old town is like where a lot of the high septon is. And she says, you know, you Targaryens do have strange customs. Like she says that in the conversation. So that's like that to me, when I heard that line, that was like, oh yeah, that's a direct link to like her old town roots. Like that's like how the people in old town would feel about the Targaryens. The whole reason why the doctrine of exceptionalism exists is because of that conflict. All that's baked in there. She definitely's got some judgment about somebody who lives like, but I think Rhaenyra's playing her a little. I think Rhaenyra's fucking with her in this conversation, in my opinion.
I mean, she flatly lies to her. And when I think about it, I think that this is actually the setup. It's not about whether or not Rhaenyra and Daemon got up to anything. It's about the fact that she lied. And I think that Allison is going to be find out that she lied. And I think the best way to make that happen is, well, we know that Maester Mellos knows something happened because he brings Rhaenyra the moon tea, which, you know, good for Viserys. Good for him saying, you know, mistakes happen. Plan B is available.
Plan B T. I love it. I was loving him. I was like, yes, let's go.
Yeah, good for him being thoughtful about it. But now, you know, we have a maester in the fold. Who knows what he'll say to Allison, right?
Yeah.
He might say something to Allison without realizing she doesn't know this portion of the story. So I think that the fact that Rhaenyra boldface lied to her is going to be the bigger problem here. I understand why Rhaenyra lied. I honestly do think she was caught off guard by Allison's anger, even more so than the accusation itself.
But it wasn't just the lying to me, though. Do you think it wasn't about just the lying? It was about how coy she was in her delivery, the walking and circling around Allison, the ability to say like, well, who is this person that's saying these things about me? You know, that's treason to talk about the princess's virtue. And how could you even believe these things? And how she was super false, but at the same time convincing Allison, because she was playing on all the things that Allison wants to believe about her. But she was playing her like it was like almost like a masterpiece of manipulation.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I'm saying is different, which is that I think Allison is going to be most upset about the lie.
I agree. No, I agree with you on that. Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on your points that Rhaenyra flipped the situation almost immediately. But I think Allison can get I think she could have actually gotten beyond what may or may not have happened between Rhaenyra and Daemon. She definitely, in talking to Viserys, gave Rhaenyra the benefit of the doubt, which is that he was like, she's still at fault, regardless of what happened. And Allison was like, yeah, but Daemon, you know, was influencing her. I think she would have gotten there eventually once she calmed down. But I don't think she's ever going to forgive Rhaenyra for lying to her. And I think she will find out.
I agree with exactly what that's going to be a big part of the rift. There's another way to read this, and we've talked about it as jealousy, and you and I spoke a little bit about it, and I really thought about this, and I was like, well, the end result of this is Rhaenyra playing the end game and being like, what are you going to do about that vulture sitting on your throne? And he's like in his Otto Hightower, And I don't think it's just because Otto put the spies on her. I honestly sat with it and I was like, that is does that scene between Allison and Rhaenyra does feel a little bit like we were friends. I'm like, how could you do this? Like, there's a little bit of jealousy. Maybe Allison had a thing for Daemon. Maybe it's more about their relationship and the kind of ambiguity around their relationship. But I kind of got the sense that Rhaenyra was like, I'm going to, like, your dad made you marry my dad. I'm going to get that motherfucker for taking away my friend and taking away my dad, and I'm going to get him. And that felt like that in that moment. She made a pointed decision of like, well, who told you that? Your dad told you that? Well, who told your dad that? Like, she was very much like that turned into that. And I think a little bit of Allison's anger was, my dad's going to be on the chopping block for this. I'm so disappointed that he would even do this because he's going to hurt this other person that I love. And I think like there's a real heartbreak happening here between the two of them again.
Yeah, I mean, I felt bad for Allison, and that because she starts a conversation with, my father received a report, and then Rhaenyra immediately is like, from who?
Yeah.
Why, like, she really, I mean, she recovers from Allison's initial anger so quickly, and I was impressed. That's what we need to see from you more often, Rhaenyra.
Yeah, once she knew that it wasn't about Kristen, but that's going to be the thing, I think. I think Kristen's going to be the thing. Like, Kristen's going to be the thing that's gonna be like, once she knew it wasn't about Kristen, Rhaenyra recovered right away.
I think you're right. I think Allison's going to be find out about Kristen somehow. And I think she's also going to be pissed that Rhaenyra lied to her. It was a pretty horrible lie. I mean, she used the memory of her mother.
Yeah, I mean, like, the way that the show's framing, the way I'm understanding is they're framing it, like, on a more meta way that it didn't have, nothing happened between Daemon and them because they didn't have sex. Which I don't know that that's really, that's, you and me both talked about this. We were like, yeah, but he did touch her. Like, her saying, oh yeah, he never touched me, that's a definite lie. She lied on her mom's grave. Like, it's kind of like outlandish, but they,
it's the other lie though. Cause I don't know if Allison just assumed this or if Rhaenyra said it, cause the scene is cut short, but Allison tells Viserys, she swore to me that she was a maiden still.
That's the lie. Yeah. That's
so
the
did
lie.
She, I wasn't sure. And I'm still not sure if Allison just assumed that or if Rhaenyra said that. I think it's fine to interpret either way, but yeah, I think it's the lie that's going to get her. And I think we have two options for the lie, which is Sir Kristen either confesses or it comes out. Cause he's also pretty close with the queen, you know, he clearly has a relationship with Allison.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? What are you going to do if the queen presses you? Like, yo, what happened?
Yep.
And you're going to be like, nah, I'm not telling you because the princess is like my homie. Like, no, you're going to have to say something. But and listen, I've been hearing a lot out in these streets about Kristen breaking his vows. I want y'all to put some more respect on Samwell Tarly's name. Okay. Samwell Tarly already explained to everybody that just having sex is not breaking the vows. The Kingsguard vows are based on the Night's Watch vows. They were written by Visenya Targaryen, and she based them off the Night's Watch vows. And all it says in those vows, as we know, is that they can't father children, that they can't take a wife, but it says nothing about the actual act of intercourse, as Samwell Tarly deciphered and took care of that whole situation. So please, don't be out here in the streets talking about forsaking the vows, because that's not what happened.
I mean, he definitely wasn't supposed to sleep with the princess.
He wasn't supposed to sleep with the princess, but it's not because of his fucking knights, his fucking Kingsguard vows. Like, he wasn't supposed to do it just because he's not supposed to do it. But like, you know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, that's, I don't know. I don't think that's not the reason why.
All right,
I
didn't get that off my chest. Let's talk about the prophecy in this final conversation between Viserys and Rhaenyra. So I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on it, because all they revealed was that the prophecy is in the dagger, which is kind of dope, right? Yeah. We know that Arya is going to stab up the Night King with his dagger. Yeah. So that part is kind of dope. I liked that Viserys used the dagger and the prophecy to remind Rhaenyra of her duty. I was not crazy about the fact that it seems like he's just revealing now the dagger. Like, have y'all been talking about this whole time, or you just told her that one thing and then went about your business?
He just told her. It seems like from everything we're seeing that he told her everything and then went about his business and then didn't say that the dagger was imbued with this information. I knew that because Condal let it slip on a podcast interview like a few weeks ago, and you and I talked about it, and I was like, he's saying that the dagger is imbued with like the information that is the reason why, and that's how it's going to get passed down generation to generation. It's not going to happen through the king always having to tell him that somebody's going to be able to find it just by lighting, like understanding Valyrian and the dagger being imbued with it. And so, like, I think he should have given that information early. I also think it's kind of a his whole reasoning and his dialogue to her, which is why I was glad that she flipped the script on him in one regard of the conversation. But I think it's kind of he's contradicting himself, because if it's bigger than your desires and your whims, you would have married the Valyrians from the get-go, because you understand that in order to keep the realm truly safe, that a person of Targaryen lineage needs to be on the throne, and preferably somebody who has like the blood of old Valyria, that like solely. And so he would have made a different decision from the jump, but now he's lecturing her about making the right decision. It just felt like a little bit off base to me a little bit. That's how 100%.
The hypocrisy was deep with all the men in this episode. Honestly, except for Damon, he wasn't really hypocritical. He was a lot of other things, but...
Yeah, he was a lot of other things, but he wasn't a hypocrite.
But yeah, the hypocrisy was deep. And it is always with Viserys. He seems to like to lecture Rhaenyra on her duty, but then he still has this problem with Corlys, because he didn't just do what he should have done, which was, at the very least, get a betrothal going between him and... Laena. But he could have offered Rhaenyra and Laenor as a possibility to Corlys before, and he never even thought about it.
Yeah,
until Lionel Strong told him to.
Well, it's just like keeping your eye off the fucking ball. Like, he was so upset since the Great Council. I've had to look at Corlys Velaryon looking across from me, judging me, saying I didn't belong here, yada, yada. And he let his ego get in the way of sound, like, advice and sound, I don't know, like, just, like, strategy, sound strategy. And that's the part that's, like, upsetting, is that now all of a sudden he's, you know, he's Monday morning quarterbacking the whole freaking thing, and somebody should have zigged when they zagged and ran the wrong route, you know.
Well, let's just take a second to address this whole nonsense between Viserys and Corlys, because I notice everybody want to call Corlys Strong proud. Yeah, he's a sea snake.
Yep.
Like, he's okay. I know Corlys likes to think of himself as a downtrodden second son, but let's be real. This man has been traveling the world, the known world, since he was 6 years old. He is actually accomplished, aside from the fact that he also inherited Driftmark and is the Lord of Driftmark. Like, he is, he's proud, because he's actually done real stuff. Like, he wasn't just born and inherited a castle. Like, in addition to that, he also is a very well-noted explorer. I mean, the man's house is adorned with things that he got when he was on these voyages. Well, of course he's proud. I'm just really tired of the Corlys is proud and, but like, okay, yeah, because he does real shit.
Yeah, I agree 110%. And he, you know, he's, and the small council room was always going to be a little bit of a crunch for him, because he's not second fiddle in any other aspect of his life. He doesn't have to ask permission in any other aspect. It was only in this aspect, like, right? He, he is like the master of ships for the realm, but he's also like the captain of a whole he was the master of ships for the realm, but he also is the captain of a whole fleet of ships. He's the king of the, he sits on the Driftmark throne. So he has like, even though he's not styling himself a king for like, you know, political and other reasons, he still like has like that, like he's never been like the even though he, like you said, he's saying about second son, he's always like the person that people are coming to, and he never has to ask permission. So to constantly being like, hey, we should go and take care of this thing that he was asking for, it already felt off for him. You know, I think we should talk a little bit about like some of the takes from like there's from like kind of like which narrative won the actual situation with Damon. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, this was a question that I had been looking at and was quite excited to have it settled. There are lots of things in the book that are left up to interpretation, or like Septon Eustace says X, Mushroom mm-hmm. says X. Mushroom is the court jester to mm-hmm. Rhaenyra and to Jaehaerys before Viserys. And so I had been really curious about this Daemon thing and the Kristen Cole thing, right? Which those are two different takes, but like I was never really sure what transpired between Daemon and Rhaenyra. And I think the show has embraced Mushroom's narrative that while they got up to hijinks and it definitely wasn't super appropriate that, you know, they did not have sex. His narrative on Christian Cole is not nearly as close, but he definitely, I think he kind of nailed the Daemon situation, and the show took his narrative on that one.
Yeah, I think I like it, and I like how they took, you know, what I think is interesting is just like it's almost like a game of telephone in the book, right? This person said this, this person said that, this person did that, and I think there's pieces of each person's narrative that play out. Like, you know, there's the part about, you know, Daemon trying to teach Rhaenyra how to like the arts of like, you know, the arts of lovemaking so that she could like, you know, seduce, like basically get Kristen Cole to want to be with her because he kept refusing her. And so like, you know, somebody could read into it that way, even though it's not exactly how it happens. We're seeing like the definitive version of what happened, but it's just like, oh, well, wow, that's like somebody could read that. There's even like a mention of like them being out in the of like something happening between Kristen Cole and then like Kristen Cole saying, no, I'm not going to do this with you. And then like her leaving upset and then running into Harwin Strong in the middle of the street. And then something happening between the two of them. And the thing that's interesting there is that she runs into Harwin Strong in the middle of the street. Right. So it's just like this different accounts that like all these things can get pieced together in the wrong way. It's just like a game of telephone. It gets told different ways, but it's so cool to be getting like the official account like of like what happened by watching the show and observing. So it's just interesting to see. I loved it. I love that that Mushroom, although not in the show, which is a whole other topic for a whole other time, is out here getting his flowers. All right, he's getting his right now.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, all right, that will do it. We are, man, 4 episodes into the season. Unbelievable. Thank you for all the messages. We've been getting some messages from people emailing. We will be responding to all of that. Maybe we'll get some of that stuff on the show. And yeah, please keep hitting us up. KinFolklore@gmail.com. KinFolklorePod on Instagram and on Twitter. Join our Facebook group. And we will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.